I want to continue our series on people just like us, which is Bible characters who, even though they lived thousands of years ago and thousands of miles away, in essence, they are people just like us. And so far in our series, we've looked at Rahab, Thomas, the woman of Samaria, Belshazzar, and Daniel. And tonight, I want us to look at Lot and his story. Is primarily found in Genesis chapter 19, and he's the man who God saved when he destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And tonight, I want us to look at Lot in the light of Sodom, and I've got eight things to say. Number one, before Sodom, in other words, the background or the context, at this time, or prior to this time, the world was dark. There's 10 generations from Noah to Abraham, and at that time, the world was dark. And one of those dark places was a place called Ur, and it's in Ur that Lot was born. You read that in Genesis chapter 11, verse 31. Ur was a great city. It was high, had a high civilization, including a great library, but it was very idolatrous and wicked. There was no knowledge of the true and the living God. And Lot was the son of Haran and the nephew of Abraham, and Terah was his grandfather. But in Genesis chapter 11 and verse 28, Lot's father dies. And so he's taken care of by his uncle Abraham. And in this dark place, no thought for God, idolatrous and wicked, God calls out to this family. And he tells them to leave her and to go to a country that he will give them. And so Abraham and Sarah and Lot and Abraham's father, Terah, they all leave her. But they stop in Haran, which was about 600 miles northwest of Ur. It was an important city in the 19th century, a commercial center. And it was in Haran that Terah died. And in Haran again, then God calls to Abraham and says, leave this place and go to the land that I have promised you. And so they leave, and this time they set out and arrive in Canaan, about 400 miles from Haran. They stay in Canaan, but then there's a famine in Canaan. So they go to Egypt, and in Egypt they get into all sorts of trouble. Abraham falls into terrible sin. He lies. He lets his wife go and live with the Pharaoh for a while. And God brings a plague. And in shame, Abraham is driven out of Egypt, and they return to Canaan. And Lot is with him throughout all of this. So Lot is part of this family that the God of heaven has called and guided. And he's seen his uncle Abraham. He's gone with him. He's seen how his uncle Abraham has trusted God, but how his uncle Abraham has also fallen into sin. And many of you listening in tonight, that's your experience, isn't it? We live tonight in a dark world. The vast majority of people in this country have no thought or interest in the God of heaven. But he's called to you. Maybe he's put you in a family. Maybe he's put you in a friendship group. You've come across Christians at Amion Park Chapel, and you've tuned in tonight. Why? Because the God of heaven, he's called out to you. And maybe you young people, you've lived with your mums and dads, and they're Christians, and you've seen them. You've seen them stand for God. You've seen how important God is to them. But you've also seen them sin and mess up, and how they've come back to God. But you've seen how God is real to them. Before Sodom, Lot, in this family, witnessing dealings with the living God. The second point is this: seeing Sodom. So the first point, before Sodom, the background. Now, the first time Lot sees Sodom. Even though they'd fallen into great sin in Egypt and were driven out, they'd become very rich men. And Lot and Abraham, they'd increased so greatly that their livestock couldn't there was no room for both of them, and their shepherds and their herdsmen, they fall out because there's not enough water and pasture land for their sheep and their livestock. And there's also added pressure because the Canaanites and the Perizzites, you read that in Genesis 13, verse 6 and 7, they are also in the land. And so there's great pressure. Two very rich men falling out. It's the first time riches are mentioned in the Bible. And it's interesting to say, isn't it, as an aside, material possession always leads to problems. How often riches come between families. In 1 Timothy 6, verse 10, it says, "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs." Two rich men, not room for both of them. But Abraham, no doubt humbled by his experience in Egypt, even though he was the leader of the clan and had every right to choose where he lives, he loves his nephew. And unselfishly and magnanimously, he says to Lot, "You choose. If I go to the right, you go to the left. And if you choose the right, then I'll go to the left. You choose." Genesis chapter 13, verse 10 and 11 says this, "And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, in the direction of Zoar." This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. "So Lot chose for himself all of the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east." Lot, he looks up and he surveys it all. And he looks from the heights of Bethel, about nearly 3,000 feet above sea level, and he chooses the district of Jordan. In the extreme distance would have been the dark mountains of Moab. At their foot, the Jordan, well irrigated and lush. The whole cleft of the Jordan Valley was rich with the most luxuriant tropical vegetation. And the sweetest spot, no doubt, the Lake of Sodom, which at the time was probably a sweet water lake. In the immediate foreground, the range of hills above Jericho. It is so fertile, it is compared to the Garden of Eden and the land of Egypt. This rich, verdant plain, brightly dotted with five exciting cities. And Lot looks, and he wanted these things. "I want all this." He thought these things would make him happy. He looked at the world, the dazzling lights, thought, "That's what I want to be." I wonder tonight whether you listening in, you are looking out to the world. Maybe you young people, for the first time, you are surveying it all. And when you think about university, when you think about your job, maybe you middle-aged people, where you want to live, where you want to retire, who you want to marry, your friends. You look at the world and it dazzles you. And then maybe you young people again, you look at mom and dad and you look at this building, and you look at church, you look at this Bible, it seems so boring. And you think, what I want is what the world has to offer me. The problem is this. Lot saw those cities as they were, not what was going to happen to them. Before Sodom, see in Sodom, my third point, settled in Sodom. You see, Lot knew he was choosing an area that was materially prosperous, yet morally degraded. He knew what the people were like, and yet he did not refrain from living among them. And if you read Genesis, you see that Lot gets drawn towards Sodom step by step. In Genesis chapter 13, verse 10, it says, "Lot saw Sodom." In Genesis chapter 13, verse 12, he pitched his tent near Sodom. Close enough to enjoy the advantages, but yet not actually part of their lives. In chapter 14, verse 12, he's now living in Sodom. He may be moved from the country to the city for better prospects. Maybe his daughters wanted to marry and settle down. He wanted society and city life. Maybe his wife, she was from Sodom maybe, and she didn't want to leave the city, and so he's now in Sodom. By chapter 19, verse 1, Lot is sat in the gateway of Sodom. The gateway was the bit where the business leaders sat. It was the focal point of the community, the heart and soul of Sodom. Lot's in the middle of it. He saw, he moved near, he went in, he sat down. Do you remember what Psalm chapter 1 says? Walk in the counsel of the wicked, stand in the way of sinners, then sit down in the seat of scoffers. You see, Lot settled down in this world. Maybe that's you. Maybe you believe in heaven, but you don't really long for it. And you believe in hell, but you don't really fear it. And maybe at first you were attracted to the world. So in my last point, there are people maybe who are at that point where they are surveying the world and they are interested by the world and they want to get into the world. Maybe you are now at the next stage where you were at that stage. You looked at it and you liked church and you liked the world and you thought for a while you could have both. But inch by inch, step by step, you now settle down in Sodom. See, Kent Hughes, he said this, Lot was the sort of man who would certainly choose heaven over hell if given the choice, but not heaven over earth. Maybe that's you tonight. You love this present world. Before Sodom, see in Sodom, settled in Sodom. My fourth point is this, a wake-up call in Sodom. In Genesis chapter 14 and verse 1 to 16, there's a war. Now, at that time, raiding, conquering, and making other kings vassals were all part of the world of the Fertile Crescent. And they were small kings ruling over a city and the immediate surrounding neighborhood. And vassals would rebel and not pay their tributes, and then there would be a military response. And in Genesis chapter 14, there's a confrontation involving Sodom and Gomorrah, and they lose. And Lot, by then, a resident of Sodom, is taken captive, and all his property seized. He was carted off, who knows where, Turkey. Reading between the lines, Lot would have seen agonizing deaths and rapes, the traditional wake of ancient victory. And as he trudged across the Transjordan towards the Canaan's borders, all his hopes were dead. And yet, in verse 13 of chapter 14, we read of one who escaped the attacks of the foreign kings and found Abraham, who was living 20 miles away, and relates the fact of Lot's capture. And Abraham doesn't hesitate to respond to Lot's distress. He does his duty as a kinsman. In fact, in the Hebrew, he's literally called Lot's brother. Now, he's been mistreated by Lot. Lot has been selfish and greedy. And yet Abraham doesn't think at all about whether he should. He just goes and he rescues. He gathers together 318 men and he goes and he rescues Lot. He travels in total 160 miles to bring Lot back. Now, in Abraham, I think we see Christ going after those who are lost. And here we have a wake-up call. And maybe you've had a wake-up call. Maybe you've gone far into sin. Maybe you are in sin tonight. You are settled in your sin. And God gives you a wake-up call. He doesn't leave you. He sends preachers after you. He's put you in that home and your parents, they're telling you all the time about Jesus Christ. Maybe your circumstances, God has shaken you by the lapels in your circumstances. In COVID, in your life, in your circumstances, God's given you a wake-up call. even tonight, as you tune in and this sermon comes to you, is God rattling your cage, saying, don't, it's not safe in Sodom. But Lot is saved by Abraham. And what does he do? All his freedom and his property is returned to him. But he returns once again to Sodom. Tonight, maybe you've gone through difficult times. Maybe they've been sat in services and you have felt God calling you. And you've been moved. And maybe you've said, if God does this for me, I'll do that. But now you've just gone back to Sodom. Before Sodom. Seeing Sodom. Settled in Sodom. A wake-up call in Sodom. Fifthly, prayed for in Sodom. One of the most incredible chapters in the Old Testament, I believe, is Genesis chapter 18. Now, bear in mind, when Genesis chapter 18 happens, Lot is in the thick of it in Sodom. But Abraham, meanwhile, is 20 miles away. And he's dining with the pre-incarnate Son of God and two angels. And they come and tell him about Sarah, who's going to give birth in her old age. And after Abraham dines with the Son of God, he walks with him and he escorts his guests, the Son of God and these two angels, as they depart. The two angels go on ahead to Sodom. And on the mountaintop village of Ben-Naim, 3 miles east of Hebron, where the Dead Sea and its surrounding plains are visible through the gaps in the hill, the sun hangs down in the west. Below is the sparkled turquoise of the Dead Sea. And just to the south, the western facades of Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham looks down. The next time Abraham looks down from this vantage point is at the end of the episode, when he looks towards Sodom and Gomorrah and all the land, and behold, the smoke of that land went up like the smoke of a furnace. So here he is, looking down in the evening with the Son of God. And the Son of God says, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Because the Son of God is about to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah with fire and brimstone. So he tells Abraham what he's about to do. And in Abraham, you can read it in chapter 18, Abraham intercedes and pleads with God for the people of Sodom. And in particular, we know from verse 29 of chapter 19, in particular, he pleads for Lot. Please save Lot. Can I talk especially to you young people tonight listening in, who may be now in Sodom, maybe with very little interest in Jesus Christ? Do you know you're being prayed for by your mom and dad? They know the danger you're in. Abraham knew the danger Lot was in. They know what danger you're in. And they're pleading with God for you. Do you know that? See, when I was a teenager, and even later in my life when I would fall into sin, I lived at home. I'd come home late, drunk. I'd been up to all sorts. And I'd creep into my bed. And a few minutes later, my mother would come in with her dressing gown on. And I'd pretend to sleep. And she'd smell my breath. And sometimes she'd hold my hand. Other times she would kneel. I can see her silhouette now, kneeling at the bottom of my bed. And she interceded with God for me. She pleaded with him, save my son. Help him not to die help him not to go to a lost eternity. And her prayer was so intense and so serious, and she wrestled with him, that at that moment, if God had said, you go to hell instead of him, she would have said, yes, just save him. Parents, we're praying for your children. Keep praying for them. Children who are praying for your mums and dads. Husbands who are praying for your wives. Wives who are praying for your husbands. Keep praying for them. And all of us, keep praying for the unconverted. You know, I'm reading a brilliant book. I've just finished reading it, but on Brownlow North by Jeff Thomas. It's outstanding. I highly recommend this book. I'm going to quote it twice tonight. In this book, there's a letter from a student to Brownlow North. This is what the student says. Oh, try sometimes to remind Jesus of me. Parents, children, friends, colleagues, let's make it our duty and responsibility to remind Jesus of the unconverted in our church. You know, my chaplain told me on Friday that one of the teachers went up to him and said, you know what I find difficult with Christians? They all think I'm going to hell, but they don't talk to me about it very much. And how much do they pray for it? Lot prayed for in Sodom. Sixthly, saved from Sodom. In Genesis chapter 19, we read it earlier on, we read of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, Sodom and Gomorrah were terrible little towns. And they were somewhere southeast of the Dead Sea. And it wasn't just sexual sin. The inhabitants only cared for themselves. There was no human rights. The poor and the needy were brutalized. And as darkness fell, about the same time as Abraham returned from interceding with the Son of God to the lights of his camp, the angels arrived in Sodom for its final dark night. Now, because Sodom was below sea level, it was still very hot, and they find Lot outside the city, or in the city gate of the city, talking, lounging, gossiping, doing business with the people of Sodom. And although he's a city dweller, Lot, by now, he still is hospitable. And so he says to these two guests, he has no idea they're angels, he says to these two guests, stay the night with me. Don't stay in the town. Come in and stay with me. And it was custom to offer hospitality. He was also accustomed to receive hospitality. But these two angels say, no, we will stay in the town center. Now, Lot knew what it was like in the town center late at night in Sodom. And so Wenham says, Lot actually manhandled them and said, no, you must come in with me. And so they go in, and Lot rolls out the red carpet. But as the night goes on, chapter 19, verse 4, the men of the city of Sodom, young and old, all the people to the last man, they surrounded the house, desperate, determined to rape the two male visitors in Lot's house. Now, at first, Lot seems very brave, and he goes out to them. He says, I beg you, don't act wickedly. But any hint of gallantry disappears, because Lot says, listen, I've got two daughters. Have them instead. Do whatever you want to them. Now, even if he thought that his daughters would suffer no harm because they were engaged to fellow Sodomites, and the Mesopotamian law code made betrothal sacrosanct, and any offender would incur the death penalty, this offer was a monstrous breach of fatherly duty. But the men take no notice. They say, who are you, Lot? You've come here as a sojourner, and now you pretend to be our judge. Who do you think you are? We're now going to do worse to you than we were going to do to those men. But the angel reaches out his hand, takes Lot in, and shuts the door, and brings blindness to all the men. And inside, these angels say, listen, is there anyone else in your house and in your family? Because we are about to destroy Sodom. Is there anyone else? And so Lot rushes to his sons-in-law, but they think he's joking. And then early in the morning, the angels wake Lot. And so we've got to go. We've got to go. Just as it's dawn, Lot lingers, but God is merciful to him. And the picture in chapter 19, verse 15 and 17 is backlit by the appearance of dawn. And the final night of Sodom has come to an end. And you can see the silhouette against the red dawn of two angels, each grasping the hesitant hands of Lot and his family, taking them through the dark streets, running out of the city, through the gates. And then they shout, "Escape for your lives. Don't look back. Don't stop anywhere." And then sulfur and fire comes down from the Lord. The city's destroyed. Just goes up in flames. And Abraham goes early in the morning to the place where he had stood the night before and looked down towards Sodom and watched its destruction. See, here's a picture of the final judgment. A day is coming when the sun will set for the last time in this world. You, one day, it will be your last day. And the question is, what will it be like? Before Jesus Christ comes, before the final judgment, what will the last day be like? Well, Luke tells us, he says, "Likewise, just as it was in the days of Lot, they were eating and drinking, buying and selling, planting and building. But on the day when the Lot went out from Sodom, fire and sulfur rained from heaven and destroyed them all. So will it be on the day when the Son of Man is revealed." Right up until the final day, it will be business as normal. There'll be Premier League football matches. There'll be rugby matches. Strictly Come Dancing. You'll go to work. You'll come home. You'll play on your Xbox. You'll go to the pub. You'll wash your car. You'll go shopping. You might come to church. It'll just be business as normal. People will just go about their business. And then he'll come. Now, there's nothing wrong with a lot of those things. There's nothing wrong with the football. There's nothing wrong with going to work. All these things are fine. But the problem is people are absorbed by them. How will you spend your last day? What's your response to what I'm saying tonight? There's going to be a judgment. One day a trumpet will sound. Everything will come to an end. And God will come. You sit tonight listening to me. Maybe you're like Lot's sons. You laugh. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. You don't believe it. You think it's unbelievable. Maybe you're like Lot's wife. No one came as close to being saved that didn't get saved than Lot's wife. As they were fleeing, she stopped. She looked back. She couldn't leave her possessions behind. She couldn't leave the city behind. And what happened? Well, fire came down and she was succumbed by the sulfurous gas. And as her corpse lay exposed, it was encrusted in salt and debris, so it became like a pillar of salt. And the historian Josephus thinks he actually saw it in his day. You see, this woman had every privilege possible. Abraham was her uncle-in-law. An angel had taken her by the hand and led her out of the city. So close. You were close, aren't you? Gerald Hemmings is your minister. Many of you live in homes where the Bible is opened up and your parents are serious about the things of God. You've been on camps. Some of you go to The Reason with Mark and Joseph and you've been exposed to these things and you know that there's danger. But there's things you can't give up. J.C. Ryle said, didn't he? "The saddest road to hell is the one that runs under the pulpit, past the Bible, and through the middle of warnings and invitations." What keeps you from coming to Jesus Christ? Ask this question. the day you die, will the thing, the person, the relationship, the sin that you cannot give up, on that day, will it help you when you stand before God? Eternity is real. Hell is real. The judgment is real. Brownlow North, he says this, the precise moment will come when you will have been 5 minutes in eternity. Imagine waking up in hell and you look at your proverbial watch, you've been there for 5 minutes. Do you know, since I've been preaching, people have gone to hell and they've been there 25 minutes. And in 100 years' time, they'll still be there. And 1,000 years. And 10,000 years. And 1,000,000 years. And they've only been there so far 20 minutes. And they're in agony and torment. And they are crying out. But they're there forever. And wouldn't it be a shame if you woke up in hell so close? My seventh point, grace and mercy in Sodom. You see, I'm sure when you look at Lot and you read what you read earlier on in chapter 19, you think, what a disgusting little man. He was greedy. He was selfish. Even when they come and save him, he lingers. He offers his daughters for the men to do whatever they want to. He gets ridiculously drunk at the end of chapter 19. He sleeps with his two daughters. Kidna says, you think, come on, God, strike this whimpering, wheedling weasel dead. He's horrible. Why was he saved? Because God is merciful. You see, verse 16, the Lord being merciful to him brought him out of the city. If you read 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 7 to 9, it emphatically says Lot was righteous. Righteous. Peter says nothing about the Lot's sin and bad, selfish, greedy, worldly choices. He actually says his righteous soul. The Hebrew word for Lot is covering. This righteousness was imputed, given to Lot. How? How? 2,000 years ago, the Son of God came to this earth. The one who dined and stood with Abraham, that one went to a cross. And he went there for Lot. And all Lot's sins were laid on Jesus Christ. You see, the story's told, isn't it? I'm sure I've told it in this pulpit, of the chief of the tribe. He's a righteous chief. He's a good chief. And in his tribe, somebody has stolen something. And the chief says, whoever's stolen it must be beaten. Beaten. And they search the camp and they find that eventually the person who was stolen is the chief's mother, an old 70-year-old woman. And they bring her to the front, to the middle. And they put her by the pole. And they're about to beat her. And the chief on his throne, he says, stop. And he takes off his shirt. And he goes to his mother and he wraps himself around her and he says, proceed. 2,000 years ago, on a hill outside Jerusalem, Lot should have been there with his incestuous, drunken, selfish, greedy, weaselly little ways. But Jesus Christ came and wrapped himself around Lot. He became Lot. So that when it went dark, And the Son of God, he cries out, Eloi, Eloi, Lamach Sabachthani, my God, my God, why have you forsaken me? It was because at that moment it was like God was looking on Lot. And then Lot can have the righteousness of Jesus Christ. Mercy. Now there were signs that Lot was a believer. He made some kind of stand in Sodom. He was surrounded by all these men. He went out and he tried to make a stand. The Bible says, isn't it, he, even though he lived in sinful Sodom and he fell into sin himself, that sin troubled him. The sin around him, it wore him down. It vexed his soul. He showed kindness and hospitality. There were signs of grace in Lot's life. But he was a pretty bad man. God was merciful to him. My final point is this. The shadow of Sodom. Now you might be listening to me and you might be thinking, well, this is great in some ways. Lot, this vile little man, goes to heaven. Brilliant. That's what I want. Can I say to you that Lot is one of the saddest men on the pages of Scripture? He was a bad witness. He did no good among the people of Sodom. He wasn't in Sodom to be salt and light. And he had no impact on them at all. He was materialistic. Can I say to you tonight, why is the church so weak in Britain today? Could it be that, I know for me, certainly, on telly we watch what everyone else watches. Maybe we drink too much. We don't keep Sundays like we should. We behave like everyone else behaves. The problem with the church today is it's full of Lots. Lot was a terrible father. His family didn't fear God at all. Like I've alluded to, they escape, but then his daughters become their father's tempter, and they say, listen, let's make him drink wine, and we lie with him, and then they have an illicit, they deceive him, and they have an illicit relationship with him, and they have sex with him in a cave. It's as dark as it gets. And when it says that he didn't know what he was doing, it doesn't mean that he was so drunk that he didn't have a clue what he was doing, but it means he just wasn't thinking straight. What a terrible father. And some of us, we need to be better fathers, don't we? And Lot had no happiness and no peace. You see, he couldn't fully trust God. He was torn constantly between two worlds. Even as they're escaping, he acknowledges, he thanks God for finding favor with him. But then he says, I don't want to go to the hills. I can't live in the hills. Please let me live in this little city called Zoar. He needs his little Sodom. But then when God in his grace allows him to live in Zoar, Lot is too scared to leave there. And Barnhouse says, when a man is out of the will of God, he is haunted by the bogeys of his own imagination. He's worried that the people of Zoar are going to turn on him. And yet he doesn't go back to Abraham. He lives in a cave. He spends the rest of his days living in a cave in the hills. Lot's life is a wretched failure, made up of hay, wood, and stubble. He escaped through the flames, as 1 Corinthians would say. And as the curtain falls on Lot's life, he is cowering in a cave, stripped of all his earthly possessions, his sons-in-law destroyed in Sodom, his wife turned to a pillar of salt, and left face to face with the fruit of his awful sin. Wretched and happy, miserable, living in dark, isolation. You know, caves are like tombs. He had a death-like existence. Can I urge you tonight? Make your calling and election sure. Don't straddle between two worlds. Don't sit down in Sodom, but sit down on the promises of God. Enjoy assurance. You see, while Lot is rotting away in a cave, Abraham is becoming an heir of the world. I believe you can have a worldly Christian. I do. But I don't think you can have a happy worldly Christian. I urge you tonight to be a happy Christian. And if this world is taking you away, do you know, John Piper said this, if you do not feel strong desires for the manifestation of the glory of God, it is not because you have drunk deeply and are satisfied. It is because you have nibbled so long at the table of this world. Your soul is stuffed with small things and there is no room for the great. Do you know, there's no mention of Lot's death. The last mention of him is in Genesis, or the last mention of the Old Testament, I should say, is in Genesis 19, verse 36 to 38, in a dark cave, doing dark deeds. He slept with his oldest daughter, slept with his youngest daughter. They give birth. The one becomes the father of the Moabites, the other, the father of the Ammonites, who become the enemies of Israel. It's dark. It's dark. Do you know, generations later, do you know who was a Moabite? Ruth. And do you know, Ruth is part of the lineage, the Lord Jesus Christ. Can I say to you tonight and encourage you at the very end, whatever state you are in tonight listening to this, God can make it for good. So I urge you, if you're a Christian in an awful Lot-like state, living a cave-like existence, you've done things in that cave which you are so ashamed of, confess them to God tonight. Leave the cave. Come back. Return to the tents of Abraham. Come back to Ahimian Park. Come back among the people of God. Leave your sin and your past and your filth in that cave and come and welcome to the tents of Abraham. Whatever you've done. Christian parents, keep interceding for your children in Sodom. Church members, keep interceding for the children of our church, for the wives who are not saved, for the husbands who are saved, who are not saved, for our neighbors, for our friends, for our colleagues. Keep interceding. Keep reminding them, keep reminding Jesus of them. Don't let them go. But if you are in your sin and you're still in Sodom, escape. Don't look back. It might seem great now, but it's coming to an end. Flee from the wrath to come. And if tonight you have heard his welcome voice, say, I am coming, Lord. Come in now to thee.